Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network, sponsored by the Brain Injury Law Group, Attorney Gordon Johnson, www.tbilaw.com, 800-992-9447. To get automatic updates, join in tbisn.org. When Attorney Gordon Johnson speaks about recovery, he isn't talking about the amount of money a survivor gets from a lawsuit or settlement. He is talking about getting better from a brain injury. Find him on the web at tbilaw.com.
800-992-9447. Welcome to another edition of Brain Injury Radio Network. Ladies and gentlemen, Fantastic Frank is in the house. Turn that curse into a gift. Fantastic Frank was trapped in a bar and carried out in a body bag, but he took action. And now he inspires others. Learn how you can go from flawed to fantastic today on the Fantastic Frank Radio Show. This is the Fantastic Frank Radio Show.
Hi there, everybody. This is the Fantastic Frank Radio Show. However, Fantastic Frank couldn't be here tonight. He's out taking care of some business, becoming famous. He's got a TV appearance tomorrow. I believe that's what he said. And so this is your regular Wednesday night host, Kim Justice, filling in. I've got a little housekeeping to take care of, and then I'm hoping that Frank's guest, Christy, shows up. He called her and confirmed it with her. And so hopefully, like I say, she'll be calling in while I'm doing the housekeeping. And otherwise, we'll be having kind of a potluck show tonight. Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week with 10 different hosts. And all of these shows, once they've been aired live, are put in the archive for on-demand listing anytime you want. So there's no reason that a person ever needs to be alone in their recovery. If you can't be here, we're on at same time, same number every night. And by the way, you can call in 424-243-9540. If you can't be here for the live show, then certainly, you know, certainly come in and listen to the archive shows. As a lot of you know who are regular listeners, I went 17 years without ever having met another survivor. So I was very polarized and isolated in my recovery. And that can be a very lonely place to be. You've got so many things going on that are different, and life isn't exactly like you thought it was going to be, and you're not able to exit and just get through the surgery or get through the crisis and then step back into your own skin, and things just aren't that easy. And one of the reasons that I came to Brain Injury Radio is that I believe there is a big gap in peer-to-peer support, and I thought this was a wonderful way to do it. We are aired all over the United States, as well as about 36 other countries have some AM syndication, and it's just a great way for people to connect. So even if you're listening to the shows in the archive, you get the idea that each host has a little bit different of an approach, different way of bringing things to the table. And certainly if you've heard one show and you're a survivor or a caregiver out there and you just didn't feel like you could connect, listen to some of the other shows, because each host has a different personality, and chances are with all the hosts we have, there's going to be somebody, if you listen to enough shows, that you're going to be able to connect with. And once you do that, you know you're not alone anymore. So I highly recommend listening to a little bit of everybody's show. We're also excited because after we, and it was a year, Brain Injury Radio just had its third year anniversary. Craig Cecilia is the founder of Brain Injury Radio. He started on Monday nights by himself 3 years ago, built up quite a lot of listeners, and that was the way he found out what a huge and gaping void there was in peer-to-peer support around the country and around the world. And so about a year ago, he decided to expand the show to 7 nights a week so that there would be more and easier access for survivors out there. And that's when myself and Fantastic Frank and all of the rest of our hosts came on. Recently, in the last month, beginning in August, we started another additional tier that is on 2 hours before we are. So we start, the original set of shows start at 7 o'clock Pacific time, and the new set of shows start at 5 Pacific time. So you can listen to a total of 5 hours of Brain Injury Radio, and that actually doubled that original amount of hosts that I mentioned to you. We're, heck, probably going to have about 20 hosts. We still do have some slots open, so if you've thought about an idea for a radio show or it's something you think you might enjoy doing or be good at, don't hesitate to be in touch with us. And we do have some good shows already. Some of you who may still be on the line from the last show got to hear the Empowerment Zone. That is our new early platform Thursday show, and it's kind of cool. It's a show on independent living, but there are several different hosts involved in that program. Les Paul, I call him our gentleman from the South, Tuesday night host in this platform, works for an independent living center and very strongly believes in the independent living mission statement. And so he thought it would be a great idea to have an independent living show on the earlier platform. Thus, it's on Thursdays. But being human and being a survivor, he wasn't going to be able to do 2 shows every week, so he solicited some help, and we got some really fantastic hosts out there. Tonight was Ken Collins' first time at the mic for his Empowerment Zone with Ken Collins. That'll be the first Thursday of each month. Next week, the second Thursday of each month, Constance, drawing a blank right now, Constance Miller, I'm sorry. Constance Miller will be the second week of each month. Les Paul will be the third week of each month. And then on the fourth, the three of them will get together and do a joint show and or have some visiting leaders in the independent living industry. On Wednesdays before my show, there are 2 shows every other week. On the first, third, and fifth Wednesday of each month is Dr. Bob Couvent, who has a show called Shaken Not Stirred. Bob, unfortunately, was recently diagnosed with Parkinson's. He's in good hands, though. He lives in the Phoenix area and is a patient at the Ali Center. And so not only being a doctor himself, Bob spent his career being a foot and ankle surgeon for 30-plus years. He's no longer doing that and was excited when I approached him about doing a show on Parkinson's. He, being a doctor himself, being new in the disease, he's able to connect with other doctors that are treating him from the Ali Center, and he's had some wonderful shows. I think he's just had 3 of them now. On the second and fourth Wednesday of each month is a show called The Happiness Experiment. The Science of Happiness. I'm sorry, I'm a little twisted tonight. I'm expecting Frank's guest and I'm not seeing her, so I'm kind of winging it. And it looks like the chat board is the chat room is left over from the last show, even though I've tried to refresh it. That's not working. So hopefully you people out there can even hear me, or maybe the way it's going, hopefully you can't. In any case, Lori Purdy Fatel is a wonderful host, and she's got some great information in the Science of Happiness. Make sure to check her out on the second and fourth Wednesday of each month. On the first Monday of each month is a fellow aneurysm survivor like myself, Kimberly Lane, and she is with the NECRO Foundation, and she and Rex have been doing shows that have just been phenomenal. So be sure to check out our new hosts. And while we're on that subject, I will say that we have had some calls and notes from people who have been listening to this tier of shows and haven't been able to find us. When they go to search our show, they're finding the shows that are on ahead of us, and they either thought we were replaced or the shows got moved up earlier, and that's not the case. It was an additional tier that was added. We originals are still here, but when you go looking for us and the page comes up for one of the other hosts, if you look down at the bottom of the picture, there is a little arrow that points to the right, and if you click that, that page flips off and you see our page like you always did. So make sure that you do that. Or you can enter through Facebook. Brain Injury Radio has a page on Facebook where most of the shows are posted. You can go to braininjuryradio.com and get to our shows that way. And you can always call in. Again, that number is 424-243-9540. And tonight, like I said, we're having a little bit of potluck. And so feel free to call in and tell me what's on your mind tonight with your brain injury, or ideas about shows or themes that you'd like to hear. And one thing I'm going to do here real quick is I was going to play you a song, but I think what I'm going to do, I do have a little bit of a fallback. I was going to give the guest a couple of minutes more to call in. I don't want to get in the middle of something else and then have her call in, but I did read something interesting the other day, and that might wind up being our topic tonight, and I will fully credit that source. So in the meantime, just going through a little of this housekeeping and with some information about all the exciting things going on at Brain Injury Radio, the expansion into a second tier. And the site, the website, the number 4, Peer, P as in Paul, P-E-E-R-1-1, the number 4, P-E-E-R-1-1.org. If you go to that site, it will tell you about a peer-to-peer support line that we've established. Ultimately, it's going to be a 24/7 proposition. I think at this point, they're up to about 8 to 10 hours a day and are looking for more volunteers. The commitment is only 4 hours a month, and you do get training. You don't have to worry about that. Lets you know what we do talk about and what we refer people for. And a lot of times people just need someone to listen. And that's where the peer-to-peer support line is going to be fantastic. So we are looking for volunteers. If you go to that site, you'll see where you can sign up to be a volunteer, and that will be really appreciated not only by the calls that you take, but you're going to feel a sense of purpose, renewed purpose. And it comes from one survivor helping another. Nothing quite like it. There's a lot of doctors and friends and family that can show compassion and try to show understanding and be helpful. But you never really know what it's like until you've actually walked in someone else's moccasins. And the only one that can do that here is another survivor or another caregiver. They're the only people that are going to come close to being able to understand where you're at any given time. And so the peer-to-peer support line is just going to be a wonderful tool of recovery and coming back out of the darkness, just like Brain Injury Radio. So, again, 4-PEER-1-1. If you check out that site, it'll tell you how to call that number if you feel you need it, as well as how to be a volunteer if you think you'd like to participate. Also, some great information on the medical ID card, and that's another project that Craig bit off, and all of the other things that he does to keep himself busy out there in advocacy and awareness land. It's about the size of a driver's license. It has one of those little swipies on the back, like your credit card, and you can put health information on there. And I'm not a big techno person, so all I can tell you is that it's quite a bit of medical information, and whether you just want to put the fact that you're a brain injury survivor and that perhaps, like in the case of Les Paul, our Tuesday night host, and I have some old hardware that we can't have magnetic imaging done, anything from something like that, a declaration like that, to pages of actual medical reports, but that's all explained on that page. I think what I'm going to do is I think that Les Paul, is that you?
Yes, it is.
Well, hi there. It's an interesting evening tonight, and I'm glad that you called in, because in a minute I'm going to want to hear all about the earlier show. But as you know, I'm pinch hitting for Frank tonight, and he had told me that he called and verified that Christy was going to come back this week, and told me that she was. He had talked to her on the telephone, but she hasn't shown up tonight. So, and in the meantime,
boy.
I've got your old chat room on here. I've refreshed several times and couldn't get it to blank out, so I think I'm without a chat room. I'm glad that you called in so I even knew that anyone was hearing me. I thought I might be in here talking to myself, and then I kind of started laughing. Yeah, everything's kind of weird, and when the guests didn't show up either, I thought, well, maybe it's not so bad if they can't hear me talking, since I'm kind of bumbling around. So I was doing the usual commercials that I do, or the housekeeping I do at the beginning, and the last thing I was going to say is we'd like to thank our sponsor, and I'd like to know how much longer we'll be doing that. Gordon Johnson of TBILaw.com. And now with me is Les Paul, who, as I told you earlier, I call him our Gentleman from the South host from South Carolina, Les Paul Morgan. And I'm Kim Justice, your regular Wednesday host. And Les Paul, I told them all about your idea in the new early platform about a show for independent living, and a little bit about your history I've already talked about. And I did explain that we forbid you from wearing yourself out too bad by doing two complete shows a week yourself, and talked about Ken and Constance, and that tonight was Ken's first show. How did that go?
It went really great, even though the first 4 minutes were silent because of Blog Talk error right there. but after
oh,
that, it
no.
Out. It was very good. We enjoyed it. I've already
spoken
to him.
Oh, you have? tell them to call in. Yeah. We can continue the show if you like. Here you guys had to get off so I could sign in on time to act as Frank tonight. And, heck, you guys could have kept going for another hour and a half, I guess, is what Frank's show is booked for tonight. So thank you for getting off so that I could come on. But the guest and Craig had asked me about the number, but it's interesting because I did try to dial out to this number. It's not an area code I recognize, and our studio popped up and said that we can't make international calls. So I'm not sure.
Well, I'm just going to say this. Blog Talk is having major problems that is really making it hard on us. And so Blog Talk, get busy and fix your stuff. Because it happened on
That's
my show,
right.
too.
That's right. You know, and it is frustrating. You know, all of us, for the audience that's listening, that are listening out there, all of us hosts are survivors of some kind of brain trauma, every one of us. And so the fact that we even made it here at all and figured out how to do a radio show is nothing short of a miracle. And so then you throw technical monkey wrenches into it, and it really is frustrating, and it makes it difficult for us to do what we need to do, not to mention, you know, how much our sponsor and Craig are spending, how much everybody on Blog Talk Radio. There must be a million shows on Blog Talk Radio, so they're bringing in a lot of money at Blog Talk Radio. And so we just went through this about 6 months ago, and it was about a month of sheer H-E double toothpick. It was horrible. In fact, Les Paul and I were talking about it in the weeks after, saying that, you know, we almost were all bound up and in an angst when we would dial in to do our show, because we were so used to taking these hits. You know, we were like boxers, you know, bouncing back and forth, because if it wasn't the chat room,
like
it was
George
the studio.
Foreman. It's like George Foreman and Muhammad Ali fighting it out.
It is. It is. We're trying to get out of the way. I mean, we'd just get one thing figured out and something else would break. And then they've been blaming it on this, I guess it's called a virus, something like DODS, whatever it is. And I'm not saying that I don't believe that. There is enough press out there with places a lot bigger than Blog Talk Radio who have been attacked by this thing. But at the same time, I can't help but wonder, you know, if they're securing enough bandwidth to handle the amount of money and programming that they're taking on, and or the security that's needed so that this kind of thing doesn't happen every 6 months. So
I know what you mean.
Glad that we'll be soon going to our own radio station, and nobody panic out there. We're not going to drop off the map. We'll still be streaming on Blog Talk Radio until everybody knows where we are. But at this rate, we're probably going to have to be more successful sending out a courier pigeon to our listeners around the world than telling them on Blog Talk Radio. So if you hear about any deals on pigeons out there, please let us know, because we're going to start writing right now, those of us that still can, and put little notes on the pigeon foot. And so don't shoot it if you suddenly see one going overhead. It's simply bringing you the message of where you can find us now. But in any case, I'm still looking at an old chat room. So I know. I'm glad you called in so I at least knew somebody could hear me. It was funny. This has just been an interesting night. We were, Craig and I were at a host meeting.
Well, I don't know if you hear me right now, but the sound keeps going in and out about for 15 seconds sometimes, sometimes 3 seconds. I don't hear you right now. I don't know if you hear me.
You just sound like you're far away from your phone.
I'm right at it.
Wow.
But there are times when I don't hear you for as much as far as 20 seconds, and suddenly you're there.
You're kidding.
No, it's been like that for several days.
Wow. You've said that, but, you know, it's interesting, and it really helps to have somebody here because, oh, there goes another jet overhead. It's interesting to hear that because you can't hear that as the host. You know, you're talking along, and on those times like what used to happen, and knock on wood, you know, where the studio had shut down, obviously you knew then, you know, when all the lights shut off in the studio, you can surmise that you're not being heard out there. And that's a consistent level of nothing, you know. But when you're here talking and there's no crackling sound on the mic, I have no way of knowing, you know, that I'm cutting in or out.
I think like the Beatles did in the early days, because they would go to Hamburg, Germany, and do concerts that were all night long into the morning. And they said, never give up, no matter what, never stop, no matter what's affecting us, let's go. That's how the Beatles became so super famous. And we just need to go like they did.
Yeah, and I'm game to do that. I'm glad that you were able to call in, only because, like I say, this chat room. Now, are you able to see a chat room?
Hold on, I walked away from it for just a minute.
It's okay. It's okay. That's all right. I mean, you can go ahead and try it or whatever. You don't have to rush over there on my account. But I'm glad to know that you were able to call in, because, like I said, I had nobody on the board. I'm talking, and I've got a chat room that's the leftover chat room from you guys' show. And no matter how many times I refresh it, it's coming back just like it was before. So we're obviously having a problem in the chat. I wasn't sure if people could even get in to this show. So I'm glad. So now, all of you out there, now that you know that it appears that at the moment the chat is not working, please do feel free to call in 424-243-9540. Les Paul and I are here, be here for about an hour, and, you know, we welcome your calls. And I was saying earlier, Les Paul, that we welcome calls not only, you know, for people to share where they're at with their brain injury, but also, you know, if there's topics that they would like to hear more about. Chances are, with all of the hosts we have, if there's something that people want to hear about out there, we've probably got it covered. So we do take requests. Can't do all of the songs that are requested, but I think we can do just about all the topics that would be requested. So whether you have a programming idea or you just want to kind of share where you're at, please feel free to call in tonight. Usually this is a structured, Frank has a very a structured show, and that only works if the guest shows up. And so tonight is a good opportunity, is all I'm saying. If you're out there listening and you'd like to call in, this is a good night to do it. And I will talk to you more about that show, Les Paul. And then I thought what I'd do is we keep chatting and carrying the ball. That's fine, too. But I did read an interesting article the other day, and I thought if nobody showed up, it's kind of funny. I don't know. The other day I copied this thing, and I left it by my computer. And I figured that if anything ever happened where one of my guests didn't show up, that I would have a fallback, something to talk about. But I've been lucky lately, and my guests have shown up, and so I can't really remember what this article was about, except that I thought it was interesting enough at the time to print it and be able to credit the author of it. I took her bio. It was off BeliefNet or one of those, or brainline.org or whichever one it was, and I'll take a look at it in a minute and maybe we can talk about that. But tell me, I was interested. Ken was as excited as a kid in the candy store in emails that he sent me today, and I've just been really flying around taking care of just a lot of unforeseen things as well as my normal busy life, and I haven't really been able to get back to him. I did get one email back that said, Ken, I'm not ignoring you at all. I've just been really, really swamped, and good luck on your show tonight, and I know you'll do a great job. And so I did reach out enough that he knew that I wasn't purposely ignoring him. But it went well. I see that when I came on initially, I saw that you had Tracy and a number of guests there tonight.
Yes. He had guests on his show that he had already planned to be on. I forget it. Tracy came in and spoke. I'm trying to remember what his topic was. It was wonderful. EFPs, I believe.
That's right. Emotional
I'm trying to say what that
technique.
Means. I know. Yeah.
Yeah, emotional freedom technique. I remember because I did his program notes. It took you prompting me for me to remember. The tapping.
Well, yes. His show was very good tonight. Everybody should go back and listen to it. Of course, the first few minutes, there's no sound. And then you hear kind of, hello, am I there? And that's when you're new to something, after a brain injury especially, You got to experiment and find your way in. He was searching for his way in through the door to come in and tell his story tonight and have his guests come on. They were wonderful tonight. They really were. And it's about empowering people with all disabilities and to find their ability and their mobility to live a life that's far above being disabled. Because even though that word is attached to society, disability does not mean no ability. It means we're capable.
Right.
And that's what he was talking about.
Huh. Well, that's great. And I did go through the whole platform of our earlier shows. And so, yes, do make sure it should be in the archive by now. But anytime in the future, like I said, all of the shows, once they conclude live, go into the archive, and they're there anytime, excuse me, for your listening pleasure. So make sure to to check out Ken's first show tonight. And next week will be Constance Miller's first show on the early Thursday platform before Frank, who will be back next week. There you are. So, someone can log into the chat room.
I was there. I just forgot to click in.
Well, see all that stuff that's in there? Up until where I start, everything up above that is your leftover chat room.
Oh, I see. Hmm.
And as a matter of fact, it said there were three brain injury radios.
I've
like
had
there
that
were
on my
videos.
Shows, too, when we're doing different ones. It does that since we've got the new double platforms, or new platforms, I should say.
Wow.
Don't know
well,
why.
Well, I also explained to everybody, I tried to take this opportunity to address some things that you and I have both gotten emails and calls on from our audience. So I did explain the thing about the page situation, you know, when they're going to look for our show and they're finding the earlier show but not ours, to go down to the little arrow underneath the picture and, you know, click that arrow and it'll take you to our page. But there's also a lot of places that we post these. You can go in through braininjuryradio.com. I'm not sure if that is cloned there either. But I think what I'll do, let me see if I can see. Oh, no. I dropped it. I hope it's not dead. Folks, Les Paul got a new... This is kind of funny. Not Les Paul. Yeah, he is kind of funny, but that's not what I'm talking about. I got dropsies tonight. Les Paul got his first iPhone, a smartphone, And I was just getting ready to tell you that one app they have for free, and then I dropped my phone, so I hope I didn't kill it. We'll take a look here. But
it sounds all right.
Well, no, I'm on my headset. I dropped the phone because what I was looking for is under apps, there's an app in there that's free that's called Flashlight. And this thing works really good. It is bright to give you some extra light. So if you'll bear with me for a moment, I'll read you whatever this article was that weeks ago I thought was interesting, and maybe it'll give us a basis for discussion, or it'll just be reading an interesting article and we'll move on from there. And in the meantime, again, callers, the number is 424-243-9540, and we'd love to hear from you. But in the meantime, Maria Ross is a consultant, author, speaker, and actress who believes cash flow and creativity are not mutually exclusive. She is the chief brand strategist and creator of Red Slice, a digital elixir of stories and strategies to boost your business, your brand, and your brain. Maria is the author of Branding Basics for Small Business, as well as her humorous and heartfelt memoir, Rebooting My Brain. A dynamic speaker, she delights conference audiences ranging from the Chamber of Commerce to the New York Times. Maria's been featured on MSNBC, ABC News, NPR, and in Entrepreneur, the LA Times, and Forbes.com. She lives with her husband and precocious black lab mix, Eddie, in the San Francisco Bay Area. Wow, she sounds like a good guest to have on, but instead I fully credited her for this article that she wrote, and it's called Who Are You? Some of us define ourselves by our role in relation to others, mother, wife, sister, others by profession, entrepreneur, consultant, belly dancer, still others by skills. I'm a neat freak. I'm great with numbers. It's easy to mistake these labels for our true identities. It's easy until a brain injury changes how you define yourself and what always made you you. In 2008, shortly after starting my own business and enduring a month of brutal headaches and neck pain, I collapsed unconscious on my bathroom floor. My husband thankfully came home early that day and dialed 911. Emergency scans revealed a ruptured brain aneurysm in my right frontal lobe. As I lay in an induced coma, neurosurgeons told my husband, "We've saved her life, but we have no idea of her brain damage or what she'll be like coming out of this. We've done all we can do at this point." Boy, how many of us have heard that? I had survived, but I might not awaken with my identity intact. But awaken I did. I had a subarachnoid hemorrhage, a stroke, which is fatal in more than 50% of cases. 10 to 15% of people never even make it to the hospital. 4 out of 7 survivors will experience lifelong disabilities. After 6 weeks in the hospital, several procedures, and weeks and months of rehab, I eventually got my strength, stamina, and life back. But brain damage causes unforeseen cognitive impairments. Your frontal lobe controls many executive functions, such as organization, information processing, and memory. Many of the things I needed to do for my work. Many of the things that made me, me. Therapists taught me strategies to adapt to these new deficits and work around them. Adaptation is great, but it doesn't come without pain, tears, or resistance. We all need to evolve and grow. Just sometimes, crisis forces you to change faster than you'd like. So, here I was, struggling to get back to the old me and failing, and all because of how I chose to identify myself. But I'm a master multitasker. Not quite. Brain injury can cause overwhelming, a broken filter, if too much comes at you at once, so I was forced to focus on one thing at a time. But I'm spontaneous and flexible. True, but brain injury makes it hard to automatically switch gears like before. A planned schedule became my new best friend to avoid anxiety. But I'm a go-getter. Yes, but brain injury often leads to depression and loss of initiation. I was flabbergasted as to why this type A energizer bunny could get up off the couch for weeks at first and could not, I'm sorry, get off the couch for weeks at first and get going. Physically, I could see my identity had changed. My long, curly red hair, my trademark, was chopped off, and when I saw my reflection for the first time, I wept. Who the hell was that woman? Who was I if I wasn't the feisty, curly redhead anymore? Silly how much we put into our surface identity. A brain injury can turn gentle people into aggressors. It can turn eloquent people into those who can't speak. It can turn graceful people into social outcasts who can't control what they're saying or doing in public. All of these are known effects that survivors can experience. So, if your personality or skills can change with a jolt of your brain, then what makes us who we are? It must be something deeper. In my new struggle to adapt to a new me, three valuable keys helped me bounce back and reclaim my identity. Number one, practice patience. You will not go from 0 to 60 just because you really want to. Healing and evolution take time. Patience is not about stagnation. As a redhead and an Italian, the word patience is not really in my vocabulary. I learned that progress happens in small, delicious steps. If you achieve small victories each day, you're moving in the right direction to a new you. It's the upward trajectory, however slight, that matters. Number two, embrace acceptance. You can keep fighting all you want, but it's much more efficient to accept the obstacles in front of you and come up with a new plan. I kept trying to get back to my old baseline. I could do certain things easily before, and damn it, I was going to do them that way again. I was my own worst enemy until a therapist said, "It's not about what you used to be able to do. It's about what you can do now. Focus your strengths. Focus on your strengths, not your deficits. Acceptance does not mean compromise. You might have to take a different route, but who cares if you ultimately get to the destination?" Number three, find the humor. People may say that's inappropriate. Whatever. My family turned to gallows humor to cope in the darkest times. My husband and I still joke about my head exploding. Humor helps lighten the load, ease the stress, lower your blood pressure, and most importantly, create space so you can think productively and problem solve. Recovery and personal growth don't need to be so darn serious. Let's lighten up. Let's get excited about the evolution. Find the humor in your journey. Find the humor in yourself. Some of my old labels fell away, but the things that really matter to who I am had not changed and actually helped me get through my fight, moxie, determination, humor. Those are all fundamentally what makes me, me. And those are much more core to my story, aren't they? Maya Angelou once said, "People may forget what you say, but they will never forget how you made them feel." I live by that. The skills, the roles, those are fleeting. But how do you approach life and treat others? That remains. I'd much rather define myself as someone who loves storytelling, who sees God in a redwood grove, who believes dogs have beautiful souls, who is quick with a laugh or a hug, who has forgiven more times than I've been hurt. Whether I can imagine a complex project, whether I can manage a complex project or remember names well has nothing to do with it. How can you use your everyday challenges to redefine yourself in a deeper way before a crisis hits? Save yourself the trouble of a brain aneurysm. The surface circumstances will always change. It's your core that guides who you are. Find that. Hold fast to that. Make that your legacy. And that was by Maria Ross. And it's funny that when I told you I copied this several weeks ago, or, you know, maybe even a month ago. And interestingly, September happens to be Brain Aneurysm Awareness Month. And so right at the beginning of September here, I'm sitting in Frank's chair and our guest didn't show up that was confirmed, and I'm reading this article, which I didn't even remember what it was about because of my ruptured brain aneurysm and the residuals I have. But boy, didn't she write that beautifully, Les Paul?
Yes, that was beautiful.
I'll bet you could relate to a lot of that. In fact, you just said some of that, and so did I.
Yes, I was typing it in on the chat room. It's just hard to believe that the things we've been through, they make you stronger, but it really tests your life. It tests your strength. Long ago, I didn't think I could possibly make it through the things I was going through. I know you didn't either. You've told me that. And
yep.
It's amazing that we're here doing a show together as we say that.
And what's really funny, we've had this talk. It's funny the parallels in this Maria's article that I was reading, because the other night Les Paul and I were talking, and he was a redhead, and he had the same issue going on that she was talking about.
Yeah.
And I'm Italian and Irish, and she's talking about that and being a type A go-getter. And it's like she's describing a composite of both of us in the things that we've talked about in the past. And in case, just for the audience sake, Les Paul has also had multiple brain aneurysms. He's our smorgasbord of brain trauma. He's had one of everything, but we'll stick on aneurysm for a minute, since that, when I started reading that, that's exactly what happened to, well, I didn't pass out like that, but I too had a ruptured brain aneurysm, and as did Les Paul, and as did this Maria Ross, whose article that I wrote, but I think that really hit me hard when I read it the first time, and then of course forgot it over these weeks, but about that surface identity, because I've had more than my share of trouble in the time that I've been in recovery with that surface identity that she's talking about, that I was a successful female executive at the time that my aneurysm happened, that I was a type A go-getter, like what she talks about in here. I was the president of our 600-member professional association. I was athletic at that time and did a lot of power yoga and went back to revisiting roller skating. I had done that a lot when I was a kid, but somebody told me that one of the few remaining rinks had adult night, and I was looking for some good, clean fun and a way to blow off some steam and a way that, you know, something you didn't have to be competitive about or wait for others to participate. And so I started going roller skating at that time, and then I was doing this yoga. So, you know, I was in great shape at one of the pinnacle points of my life, feeling my best, looking my best. 35, I think, is a good age, you know, between 30 and 35, you know, or maybe 35 and 45, I don't know, but just at one of those peak times where you're looking good, feeling good, accomplishing things, and really making your mark in the world, or at least starting to, you know, or well into it. If you've been out of school and you've worked through your mid-20s and you're up to your mid-30s, you know, you're about 10 years hopefully into what you're going to be. So I had all these descriptions, you know, and blonde. You know, I talk about a lot of the time when I was being less than honest in my recovery, since I looked normal, when I'd forget things or do something that had to do with the deficit from my brain injury, I'd blame it on a blonde joke. And it was funny because I used to get offended by those before my injury, and I'd get mad at people because I was a really smart gal, and so for somebody to minimize and tell blonde jokes, I thought was insulting. But then when I had my brain injury, rather than be honest and say what the truth was, I'd tell a blonde joke on myself, and then it was suddenly okay because I would rather chalk it up to a blonde joke than be honest about what was going on or not going on in me. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that, well, again, in 1995, you got to remember there was not a computer on every desk. You know, people now will hear my story and go, why weren't you out there looking? And I'm like, looking where? And, you know, in 1995, we didn't all have a computer on our desk and an iPhone in our hand, you know? I suppose I could have gone to a library, but I was really having a lot of trouble reading, you know? There were no support groups at the time. And so, you know, my surgeon was a traveling surgeon. He left, and I didn't have a doctor anymore because he misdiagnosed me. So I was, you know, pretty much... Okay, I said the blonde joke, no pun intended, a dinghy out there without an anchor, floating around in the water, getting bashed up against the rocks. And so it's interesting because that was the time, and I think a time for a lot of us who have gone through brain trauma, where we've based a lot of our identity on surface elements like what she's talking about, and when those are taken away, it's like being stripped naked in the middle of the city. You know, we don't know what to fall back on. And, you know, that's a time when, you know, I've heard you talk a lot about your mom and how she helped you, and but you were going through the same kind of troubles, and she was, you know, the one of the major cheerleaders for you that helped you get through your recovery by doing all the things that she did. And for me, I had a unrelated support group that I had been in for 7 years, and I didn't talk to them. I mean, they knew what had happened to me. They were filling the hospital praying for me when I was getting my craniotomy and when I was in a coma, and, you know, they were there to give me rides and things like that, but it wasn't a brain injury group, and I didn't know how to process what happened to me myself, let alone try to talk to people, to try to tell someone else, you know. I didn't even know what to tell me, so I didn't know what to tell them, but I had the comfort of people being with me We just didn't talk about that. And that was okay for me. I got to tell you, that saved my life. If I wouldn't have had that, and I, you know, if you take that away, I didn't have any support. You know, I wouldn't have had any support. And I'm not sure, you know, I'm not sure that I would have made it one way or another. I would have been stuck because I had that will and determination. But when I got that rug of life jerked out from underneath me, there's a period of time where you really don't know if you're coming or going. What do you think about all that?
Oh, it's very true. You know, you were talking about how I tell about my mom so much, and she was instrumental in my recovery. But my brother Steve was, too, and my brother Phil was. Maybe I don't mention them enough. My brother Steve was a very cool guy. Everybody everywhere loved him. I'm not kidding. I never met anybody that didn't love him because he was so unique. He sat down on the porch with me one day and said, "Hey, man, I understand you got a brain injury." "Mm-hmm." "Yeah, Les, you got a brain injury. What are you going to do with your life now? You know, Mom and Dad are getting old. You know, all the family is slowly getting older, and you're going to be alone one day. You're going to be alone. You'll probably be the only one of us that lives." And I'm going, "What are you talking about, Steve? I don't even think I'll outlive any of you." It turned out that he was correct, all but one brother. It's just me and one brother left, and we were a big family of seven at the time. And he'd say, "If you don't start now, if you don't start picking up the pieces right now and living your life, you're not going to be a failure. You're not going to exist." And he'd sit down with me and talk with me for hours on end. And he had a rare neuromuscular disease called myasthenia gravis that took his life along with cancer.
I've heard of that.
Yeah,
wow.
It was a terrible, terrible disease.
Now, was Steve a musician?
He had guitars. He had saxophones. He had all kinds of different instruments. He didn't always play them, but when he did very well. I've got a picture of him taken by the Aiken Standard. That's the local newspaper back in 1977 that I keep in the house, of him playing the saxophone downtown in Aiken and a news reporter coming by and doing a story on him.
Well,
he's
now
the
he's the one, though, the musician guys, the Aiken fella who
him
you
and Mike Aiken were very good friends.
Okay, so I got the right brother. Okay.
Yeah. If Mike Aiken was here, he would tell you that my brother was one of the most unique individuals on this planet. I mean, he really was. I'm not making it up. But we all are in our own way. My brother Steve always said that to me, but he managed to go to Woodstock, the original Woodstock, and meet Janis Joplin and all the famous band. He rode a motorcycle through 19 states and led about 100 Harley riders behind him, and he wrote almost a book. It's not a book. What would you call it? A memoir or something of his trip. He called it the Starship Crew or something. I can't remember the name of it. It's something like that, where he led them, and they went in each town they did. They would do Toys for Tots, and they would go help people that were homeless, and they'd raise money for each charity. They did you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, like a marathon thing?
Well, it's got the word run on the end, a poker run. It's a poker run where they raise money for people and charities and veterans all over the country. And my brother led all those motorcycles all over the country. I've got pictures of him all over the United States, from the White House to San Francisco, down to Florida, all over the place, at World Trade Center. And he was one of those people that everybody seemed to know. And I'm not trying to brag him bigger than everybody else on earth, because he'd say, "Les, I'm not that." He would. But he's the one that brought me the motorcycle when I was 11 years old. He always encouraged me. Everybody always said he was above normal character. And, I mean, he was a motocross racer. He was a chef. A master chef. He worked in every restaurant in San Francisco. Then he decided he wanted to take up architecture. And later on, he became let me see, a wallpaper contractor. And he said, I don't care if you have a brain injury, Les. Your brain injury isn't what makes you. He said it might be part of what defines you in the past, but don't let it define you in the future. And I said, what do you mean, Steve? And he says, buddy, you're still alive. He'd sit on the porch with me at our house and say, you know, you and I are two people that should have been dead a long time ago, because he had all that cancer and myasthenia gravis. And he saw all the brain surgeries I had. He flew from California when I had the aneurysm and landed in Aiken and came and stayed with me. And I don't even remember it, but everybody told me he was there. But he's one of those people that just believed in people helping people, like Craig and you and all of us do. That's what Brain Injury Radio is all about. My brother Steve would say the biggest thing in life that he would see out of me is helping other people. And so that's what your mission is. That's what my mission is about this. I don't want it to be about me as much as I want it to be about helping people find themselves after traumatic brain injury and related disabilities like aneurysms. Because I've had both,
right.
You've had aneurysm, and it's hell on earth. It's like a fireball hits you in the head.
And this identity thing, it sounds like you had, if you did have any surface identities, like the fact that you were a carrot top and some of those things, it sounds like you had a lot of good examples in your life that even before your brain injury, your core had some really good examples set for it. So when you did hit the skids for a time after your brain injury emotionally, as we all do, things like you're describing that, you know, that Steve was doing was what he was telling you is don't have a surface identity of being a brain injured person and put a period at the end
of
that.
He said I had to reinvent myself. He said, Les, you're going to have to work as hard as you can to reinvent who you were and who you are. Use your core beliefs of who you are and start from there. And it really changed my mindset. It really did.
Yeah, I think that's great. You were better. I had a lot of superficial. My identity was tied up in a lot of superficial ways. And so, you know, depending on how steeped you are in the superficial surface identity and how out of touch you might be with your core identity can be a big determiner of how quick and how, well, I won't say easy, just to what degree of difficulty that a person might have in recovery. And it's interesting that we bring this up because the guest that was supposed to be on tonight, and I hope that they're able to listen, at if nothing else tonight, to the show. I know we started off rocky, but, you know, that's really what was going on, and I'm not saying names because the truth is there's probably a million stories out around the world like this, but it was a mom, you know, a mom who was going to be coming on talking about her son, who's 16 years old. So here's a kid who's at a very hard time for a boy or a girl at that age with the hormone shifts and the trying to gain autonomy and individuate away from the family and find independence and do all those things that are so hard even for somebody that doesn't have a brain injury, that you lop the brain injury on top of it, and gosh darn, that is harder than heck. But part of what the moms out there are concerned about with a lot of these kids of theirs is that their kids are stuck. They're stuck in the fact that they had an idea of how their life was going to go. It didn't go that way, and they can't accept it, and so they've withdrawn, and they're in a quitting mode. Not at this point. They're not at a permanent quitting mode, but they're in an isolation mode, like a holding pattern where, I don't know, if you're not going forward, a lot of times you're not just standing still, you're going backwards, and you don't even realize it. I think the longer you stay standing in one spot, it's kind of like when you're at the ocean, and you're closer to it than I am, but it's been a long time since I've been to the ocean, but I remember that feeling, you know, when the tide washes up and you're standing there, and then the tide starts going back and the sand is, whoosh, you know, going away underneath your feet.
Yeah.
You're actually standing in one spot, but everything is moving backwards. And I think that's kind of what happens when people, if they were tied up in that surface identity and they go through a brain injury and they decide to take the position of staying in bed and pulling the covers over their head with the shades drawn, that, first of all, I'll say that I think all of us have had our moments of that because, you know, in recovery, grief, the stages of grief are just a part of it. When you let go of the old you and have to start adopting a new you, you know, there's a grief process that happens. So it isn't wrong that we have any of those feelings I just talked about, but when it becomes, and I won't use the word wrong, but when it becomes dangerous and sad is when it goes on too long. And we won't let go of the rock.
Yes.
And that's that everybody does have a different amount of time it takes to process. We can't say, you know, in 14 weeks, you're going to feel 80% better. You know, we can't say that. You know, so we don't know for sure. We do know that everybody processes at a different rate. But there's a point you got to stop, like your brother Steve was telling you, and buck up. And this is where my faith helped me, because somebody reminded me of my core values when I had lost them for a moment there and let the sand of my surface ones start taking me backwards, because it took me so by surprise, you know. I mean, you don't expect that when you're a young person. You've got an agenda going, or an old person, but I mean, especially a young person. They've been living their life, and they're bulletproof, and, you know, the sky's the limit, and all of a sudden, things are different. That there is no doubt about the fact that that is hard, but you can't stay stagnant. Is that our guest?
I'm here. Sorry, my phone is ringing.
Oh, good. It's you. I thought it was Blog Talk Radio. Or maybe our guest was calling you. In any case, it's a dangerous place to be, to stay in that bed too long, because not only does your body start to atrophy, but so does your emotion, your heart, your brain. You know, last night our guest, Dr. David Nielsen, who was on my show, was talking about that place where we get stuck and we have to make a decision, you know, and that decision is what action we're going to take to move forward after we realize, yeah, we got the rug of life pulled out. We're not going to be able to maybe do or accomplish the thing we thought or hoped for, our first bucket list item. But that doesn't mean the ball game's over, because we're still drawing a breath. If the ball game was over, we wouldn't have survived. The fact that we survived, and when my friend, a spiritual advisor I had actually, reminded me of my core values and said, you understand that your life was a gift in the first place, and you got a second gift, at least with what your lifestyle was like. for a time. You know, this is probably the third gift of life you've gotten. And so you didn't get that, so you could lay in bed and let it fritter away. You know, it, at that point,
what he was
trying to tell me in a nice way, and I hope nobody takes offense out there, I'm just saying what somebody told me is that, you know, I was 35 years old, and I had been sloughing long enough, and somebody who knew me well enough said, you know, you got to buck up and move forward. You're acting like a kid holding your breath until you turn blue with your feet dug into the sand. You know, you got to start moving forward and make that life. You know, you're not a dummy. You've tried different things in your life before. The problem here is that you didn't pick it. That's one of the things that you're angry and upset about, is this wasn't a choice. You know, the aneurysm wasn't a choice, but what I do with my life after it, a lot of that is a choice. And I guess I chose to be grateful that I had another shot at it and decided to try some different things until I could find the elements that were going to work and it. Sorry, another jet plane going overhead. I'll explain that to everybody in a minute, too. But anyway, you know, trying a lot of different things to see what I like and want to keep in my life and what I don't care for, but I can say that I've tried it. And in a way, you can take that, oh, you know, that old saying that most people's grandma had, you know, making lemonade out of lemons. You know, after you get through the initial, what a crappy thing it was that this happened and changed my life agenda, if you can get to a place where you can actually not only get out of the bed and put up the shade, but get out of the house and start trying some things, it isn't important at that moment whether you like it or you don't like it. What's important is that you're up and you're willing and you're trying. And as long as you keep doing that, you're going to find things to fill the void that was made when you had your brain injury. You're going to find good things to put in that void. Hopefully not hang on to the bad things. And truly move forward in your new life. And I think that, you know, I don't want to sound preachy, so I'll put it back in first person and just say that, you know, that the things we talked about tonight, that surface identity and core identity, when I was operating in my surface identity, I had a lot of shame and felt like I was a complete failure after I had my brain aneurysm. When I got to my core, I knew that that was going to be the skill set that was going to move me forward into who I was apparently destined to be. And I did have choice there of how I was going to react to what happened. And again, it's natural to go through some sadness, some depression, some remorse, some anger. All of those things are normal feelings. You wouldn't be normal if you didn't feel them. But somewhere, there's got to be a line drawn in the sand that you step over and move forward. And so I guess one of the things that I would have said if to the mothers out there and our guests, if they would have come, is that what I would have liked to have seen is her son on the radio show. And not just her. Are you still there, Les Paul?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. Just checking. Sorry.
I'm here.
He must be cooking dinner or something. He's only half there, I can tell. Anyway, I could tell by what input you put in or you don't, but that's okay. I can talk for the rest of the time.
I'm sorry. I got real quiet listening to you.
You were probably nodding off. Well, all I was going to say is that, you know, for those mothers, it's nice that they're standing by their children and that they're parenting, you know, they're parenting. And this horrible thing has happened to their kid and they feel powerless over it. And so sometimes in a reactionary way, they'll just try to overprotect from something that nobody could...
Big time.
You know, yeah, nobody could keep that first thing from happening. So some of those parents are going to go in there and overprotect and think that's going to make up for the fact that this thing happened to their kid that wasn't their fault to begin with. It's just something that happened. Life happens, you know. And the truth of the matter is, at that point, when there's got to be a line drawn in the sand on that, the difference between helping and supporting a loved one,
exactly,
or smothering and enabling a loved one to stay a victim. And I think that's really important, because as long as we view ourselves as a victim, we're going to have a lot of excuses for not moving forward. And the day we drop the mantle of victim and step into the skin of the new me, we can drop the bag of rocks we've been dragging around on our back for however long it's taken us to process this horrific event and try to move forward in our life. And I think that for me, again, I don't want to be preachy and speak for others, but I've heard you say it before, Les Paul, and others in our audience and our hosts, is that when we started reaching out and helping others, we weren't thinking as much about ourselves. And
exactly.
Each time we do that, it starts a building block. You know, if you picture building a building out of bricks, and we start and we've got nothing, and we place the first brick, well, that doesn't seem like very much. That's not impressive. Heck, that'd be easy to turn away and walk away from, one darn brick. But you stay, and you put the mortar in, and you put the next brick down, and it's going to take a while to build a brick house. Hopefully, you're not going to put yourself in a position of trying to do it alone, like I did for too long. You're going to have people there with you, physically with you, spiritually with you. And if you hang around in places like this, Brain Injury Radio, you're going to know that there's people just like you all over the world, and collectively, you're all building the same building in some ways, because you're all bringing a brick. One of you is mixing up the mortar. One of you is spreading the mortar on the brick. A few of you are placing the bricks. And before you know it, the house is built. But in any case, it's a journey, and I think a lot of times we get the idea that we don't have any choice. This terrible thing has happened, and it's taken our choice away, when the truth of the matter is it's opened a door to a whole different set of choices. And we can choose to look at it forever as a curse, or we can choose to look at it as an opportunity for adventure. And know that we have the freedom now to try new things. You know, I was in the same career for 25 years, and there was a lot of times I wanted to break away and try something different. But I didn't, because for one thing, change is scary. Ah, okay. Sorry, I was reading the chat room trying. I had been sitting back. I wasn't reading the chat room because everybody quit writing a while ago, but then I saw some little print. Okay. No, you call in and tell me. You did that last night. I've got a person last night who was texting or writing in the chat, and I thought, bring those questions on air, by golly. But anyway, the choice might not be what you thought you wanted. But going back to what I was saying before I started trying to multitask, just like the gal said in the article, and everything kind of spun out, was several times in that 25 years I wanted to try to do something different. But the fear of change kept me where I was at. The fact that I was making a really good living kept me where I was at. A lot of different elements kept me where I was at. But there was a long time that I had wanted to make a change and try something different. I mean, who on earth, I read a statistic once that said a person without a brain injury, your average person, if you will, changes jobs something like, I forget what it was, 7 times, or might have even been like 9 times over the course of their lifetime. Well, I had had one job, too. I had one job through my high school and college. So that was an 8-year job. And then went into my career right out of college for the next 25 years. Now, it wasn't that I was that boring. I did have a lot of different hobbies and things. So I did have a lot of diversity in my life, but not in my profession. But there were different professions that I wanted to try and different things I wanted to try, and I didn't for 25 years. And then this aneurysm happens, and I'm angry that I can't go back and do what I've been wanting to change for 25 years, which is an interesting thing. But it's because there was security in what I thought I knew. It's almost, parallel to the kind of thinking that goes on in an abuse situation. You stay because change is scary and you don't know what else to do. So you stay with what's familiar because it's familiar, and it's too nerve-wracking to try something else. Well, you know, a power greater than me gave me that opportunity to try some new things, and I didn't have any choice. I tried to go back and be who I was before, and I did it for a lot of years, and then I couldn't anymore because I burned myself out with full basket syndrome and sensory overload, and I made myself really physically and emotionally sick by pushing the envelope too long, too hard. It was as if the aneurysm, you know, was the first red flag that came up that said, yoo-hoo, you need to make some changes in your life. But I took it to mean, oops, I was broken, I got fixed. Now I need to pop up and the show must go on, you know, and go back to what I was doing. And so, boom, you know, the gastro stuff started happening. The wide emotional swings started happening. The sensory overload all the time. The full basket syndrome. Vision problems. I was starting to see dyslexia. Again, you know, flipping my numbers and my characters around. And so between being physically sick, I was emotionally sick. And here I had just survived nearly dying. You know, I had survived a ruptured brain aneurysm, which I just read 50% don't. You know, and a big percentage of those don't even make it. And the rest of us have some issues that we're going to deal with the rest of our life. But everybody's got issues, and everybody's got a past, a history. Maybe you grew up in an abusive home. Maybe you were in a domestically violent relationship. You know, maybe you were the wrong race at the wrong time. Everybody's got a reason that they can make excuses for not moving forward and finding their bliss. And I don't know. I can sit here today and say that it isn't easy, and I'm not sure what my life plan is supposed to be or my life destiny at this point. But I do know a couple things, and we've talked about them before on here, and that's that 2 years ago, if you would have told me that I was going to be a published author, speak to groups, and do book signings, then become a radio host, and now when I'm speaking, I'm an advocate who's raising awareness to what's going on out in the world of brain injury, I would have laughed out loud, LOL. I would have laughed out loud because that was so far from who I ever dreamed I could be. I wasn't an English major. How could I write a book? You know, I didn't know anything about publishing. How could I self-publish and promote and wind up on a radio show? I didn't do broadcasting or journalism. I have a BS in business, and it's really a miracle. It's not only a miracle that I lived, but it's a miracle that in spite of me, I got the change I was looking for 25 years, and I didn't immediately realize that it was a blessing until fairly recently. So that means it took me 18 years, which is not to say I didn't realize there were a lot of blessings along the way, that I got to keep my life, that I've gotten to help a lot of people, that I got the opportunity to meet my husband 10 years after my aneurysm happened. So with him, there wasn't any comparison of the old me and the new me. He just met me, and I was enough. And I feel bad, you know, for the people that had a long-term relationship going and that they had to lose that along with everything else that they lost with their brain injury. Because for the other person, destiny wasn't going to play out the way they thought it would. But the same thing happened to me. I had a fairy tale wedding right in back of my brain aneurysm. And boy, was that a relief to take my mind off of the horror of what had just happened to me and plan the fairy tale wedding. And I'm talking about the first one. And boy, were we cute. We looked like we could have been on top of a 10-tier wedding cake. And it was perfect. You couldn't script. In fact, this is the book I should write. My reality was that I've been... Oh, 90 seconds. I might go just a little. Let me come down here for this 90 seconds. I'm probably going to finish the show, but probably not in 90 seconds. Close to it, though.
Okay.
What I am going to do is I'll finish a thought, but you ask me what time it is, and I tell you how the watch works. You all know that. So I'm going to end this portion for the live listeners. If you do want to call in, we're not going to be here long, but 424-243-9540. This is Fantastic Frank's show. I don't know how he normally ends it, so I'm going to take us into overtime for just a minute. We've got 60 seconds. I'm going to play you my 51-second outro of something I believe we all have, and that is a guardian angel. This is 51 seconds of Leah West. Check out LeahWest.com.
Yes, it's your time to leave. But don't you worry, you won't be there alone. You see, there's someone who's been waiting for you.
Boy, I hope the audio doesn't sound as bad as the music does, the talking part. That was what is usually a really beautiful song by Leah West, L-E-A-H-W-E-S-T. Check her out at leahwest.com. That song is called Guardian Angel. I'm just going to tell you the end of my story and then let Les Paul make his closing comments, and then we'll close out the show for Frank. But I wasn't watching the clock. I'm sorry about that, folks. But in any case, so I've been dating a guy for close to a year. I have this brain aneurysm. He sticks by me through it. The aneurysm is in January. And in April, it was my birthday, he asked me to marry him. And all my life, I had just assumed I would grow up, get married, and have a family. And good God, I was 35 and I almost died. And I had been telling myself, I can do that later, I can do that later. And I was busy racking up surface accomplishments and indulging myself in life, and I figured I'd get around to that marriage and family stuff later, and holy mackerel, I almost died and missed it. So in April, when he asked me to marry him, I said yes, and we got married in October. And so all of that was a pretty short period of time from January to October. And so what a way to not process something so horrific that you can't process it than by changing your focus a completely different direction and planning the fairy tale wedding. And, you know, I did what I did at the time, but I don't recommend that. That's setting yourself up. We did have a beautiful wedding. Unfortunately, that was the most beautiful part of our relationship, was the wedding. The marriage, uh-oh, not so good. Beautiful wedding, marriage, not so good. But it always takes two, and I shouldn't have been getting married. I shouldn't have said yes at that point. I didn't know whether I was on foot or horseback, and I just knew that what had just happened to me, they told me I was better. They sewed me up. They stopped the bleed in my brain. I looked normal. And I couldn't process the horror of what I had just been through. And so it was a lot easier to plan something happy than to try to deal with something overwhelming in the emotional department. So that was the end of the story that I couldn't tell in 90 seconds. But needless to say, I knew that I had made a mistake relatively soon after walking down the aisle, but I stuck around and put him through medical school, and then I left. And that's another difference. A lot of stories I hear about, you know, it's not the survivor that left the relationship, it's the other person. But, you know, I can pretty much guarantee you that if I wouldn't have cut and run first, eventually he would have. Because I don't know, you know, medical school, for those of you familiar with medical school, is that is all they eat, breathe, and think. And so I was emotionally unavailable because of the trauma I had just been through. And he was emotionally unavailable because of the intellectual academic undertaking that he was in the middle of. So basically, you had two emotionally unavailable people living in the same house, not connecting. And so, I don't know. I do believe that nothing happens by mistake. And apparently, I needed to buffer for a while, something else to think about until Mother Teresa has a quote, and I put it in my book, and it was, God will never give me more than I could handle. I wish he didn't trust me so much. And I believe that, and I think that's probably what was going on is, you know, in my right mind, I would have known that you don't get married a couple months after a craniotomy and think you're going to ride off into that fairy tale ending, write that fairy tale and have it end the way that you want it to. Life just doesn't work that way. So anyway, Les Paul, do you have any closing comments or anything that you'd like to say?
Well, I just want to thank you for filling in for me tonight. I hope he's doing all his guest, or his guest, I'm sorry. I forgot what happened. His guest didn't show up, did she?
No.
I'm just, you know, we're just rolling with the punches. Sometimes we don't know what to say because the way life hits us. And we roll with the punches and keep on going. You don't surrender. You don't. That song, There'll Be No White Flag Upon My Ship. What's the name of that song? I love it. Was it? Lady sings it. There'll be no white flag upon my ship.
Oh,
that one.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember it good, right? Don't raise your white flag and surrender. Don't give up. The biggest message is a very simple message for survivors to continue fighting, thriving, living, trying their very best to find work again. There is work for survivors. I'm a working survivor. Even though it's only 7% of the population, America is full of innovative people who've had trauma and that could go back to work one day and create the next big thing and make a fortune at it. Don't think I'm lying. There are people who've done it already. And don't allow yourself to ever surrender because that white flag's not allowed. We're supposed to come out with our cannons and our guns ablaze, and we'll say we're here to stand, and we're here to hold up the disability movement, the brain injury movement, and keep it moving. And I'm proud of what you did tonight, just doing it off the cuff without being even prepared. I mean, you did very good.
Thank you. I've been so used to interviewing people now for a long time. I've never had to improvise like that for an hour and a half. I used to do that. You know, I'd kind of switch off. I'd do a topic, I'd do a guest. I'd do a topic, I'd do a guest. And now for a long time, I've been blessed to have some wonderful guests and you know, hone my interviewing skills. But I haven't really had to sit here and orate for that amount of time, but I'm sure that Frank had told me that he called and confirmed that the guest was going to be on, but Blog Talk Radio has been having so many problems that, you know, perhaps she had a hard time getting in, and I did have a number. I couldn't text that earlier. I'm sorry when you asked me, but I dialed the number twice from the studio, and it said we can't make international calls. So whether that was really an international number or just another practical joke from those silly guys at Blog Talk Radio, it just wasn't meant to be that we hook up with that
guest
tonight.
Well, I can't
tonight,
wait to hear the new network.
No,
way
me
better.
Neither.
I'm ready for it after this.
couldn't get much worse than this, that's for sure. But for Christy, who is going to be the guest, know that our thoughts and prayers are with you. The second time you tried to get on the show and it didn't work out, but I hope that some of the things have helped. Next time, have your son tune in. As long as he's just laying in bed anyway, stick the computer in there and put the show on. And certainly you call for support, but he should probably turn on that computer and come and listen to Brain Injury Radio. Meet some other survivors who have laid in the same position, the same state of mind that he's in. And then he won't be alone, and he'll be able to do those things that your average 16-year-old is doing, and that's learn how to individuate, find some autonomy of his own. The brain injury might have changed his plan, but he's still alive. And so for all you mothers out there protecting your kids, you know, that's, I guess, what mothers come with, is that protective instinct. But sometimes that protective instinct extends longer than it should. And we've got to allow our kids to be independent. And so, in any case, Christy, I hope you and your son will tune in to Brain Injury Radio in the future and call in and participate. And I guess the two things that we were going to leave you with tonight, and with anybody else who's out there feeling like they need some help or they're isolated, is number one, you want to see if there's an independent living center that you can go and visit with. And Les Paul taught me that the way you know the difference, there's a lot of companies out there that are disguised as independent living centers, but independent living centers don't cost money like going to treatment. It's not a place you live. It's not a long-term care facility.
It's not medical.
It simply will help you with some tools to help you be, thus, to help you move toward independent living. They give you tools. And second, to find a support group, so that you're not trudging the road by yourself, but you've got others of like mind who are trying to move forward, and you get the strength in numbers. One of the things that I have permanently in my program notes is that it's in the we that we discover the me. So I guess those would be the two messages that we would have been talking about tonight, and the tools that are out there for you to use. Independent living centers and support groups. If those are a couple of things you can find, certainly go more than once. I would recommend attending 3 to 6 of these sessions in either one of those places, in both of those places, before you make a decision. Because, you know, from day to day, we're all in a different mood. You know, maybe you go to a support group today and you're just not open, and you're like I was at one point, with your arms folded in front of you, holding your breath till you turn blue, and you're not open and willing. Maybe you're not desperate enough to listen yet. Don't just go one time and quit, or you go to the independent living center and you don't like what they've told you that first time. Don't throw in the towel after one visit. Give yourself a chance. Try 3 to 6 visits and really try to go in with an open mind, your ears open and your heart open, and you might be surprised with the results that you find. Want to thank you guys all for being here tonight and listening. Frank will be back next week, and we wish him luck on his celebrity tour. I think tomorrow he was going to be betray us on radio and be on TV, and we'll let him tell you about that when he comes back. But we appreciate your support of Brain Injury Radio. I appreciate you being here and listening tonight. What are we? Thursday night. Tomorrow is Kevin's show, Kevin Phillips. Be sure to tune in for that. And then we will probably have some surprises on Saturday. So we appreciate you being here. And everybody, have a great night. Good night, Les Paul.
Thank you, Kim. Good night.
Good night.